Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Let's have a conversation about sex trafficking. If you listened to last week's episode on Toni Sharpless, we discussed the theory that she had fallen victim to a sex trafficking ring in Camden, New Jersey. Neither one of us agrees with that theory. However, sex trafficking is a very real problem and a huge industry in the United States. So this week, we want to talk about someone who, in all likelihood, was sex trafficked and could be very much alive.
On December 21st, 2007, 17-year-old Danica Childs was staying at a friend's house. She spoke with her mom on the phone and said that she'd come over later so she and her sisters could go Christmas shopping. But Danica never showed up. Her mother couldn't get in touch with her, but, you know, initially just thought that maybe Danica changed her mind. But when no one had heard from her by the next day, her mother knew something was really wrong. As she dug into her daughter's disappearance, she discovered that Danica had been careening down a dark path for months, one that her horrified mother knew nothing about and likely led to her daughter's disappearance. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Danica Childs. I'm Coda Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Danica Diane Childs was born on May 25th, 1990 in Washington. She was a sweet girl who was smart and energetic. One of four sisters, she and her family were close growing up. She was creative and wrote poetry, and she thought she'd maybe turn them into songs one day. If Danica were a teenager today, she'd probably be one of those TikTok girls, because when she was in elementary and middle school, she and her friends like loved to choreograph little dances. And, you know, she'd be in talent shows and just do all sorts of stuff like that. Danica was also a good student. In fact, she was so good that when she started high school, they suggested that she enter into a program that allowed students to take college-level classes so she could basically start working toward an associate's degree while she was still in high school, which, like, sounds amazing to me.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, can you imagine just basically having an associate's degree when you graduate high school?
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Talk about a time saver.
Yeah.
And everyone thought Danica would do great in the program, but she actually struggled when she started. And I can only imagine how that must have felt for her. I mean, she had spent her entire life up to that point having things come relatively easy to her. So to take on a challenge like that and then kind of hit a brick wall must have been really tough. But she stuck it out for a little while and made some friends while attending college classes, including an older boy who she met on the bus to the community college. The pair started spending time together and started dating. Danica didn't ultimately stay in the dual enrollment program, though, and instead she decided to enroll in an alternative high school that allowed her to attend classes but also work several days a week. But it seems as though that program wasn't a great fit either, because Danica actually left that school as well. At that point, she was just considering calling the whole thing and getting her GED. Ultimately, she decided to stick it out and re-enrolled in the alternative high school program.
So it sounds like she was jumping all over the place.
For what it seems, that was out of character for her as well. Like I said, Danica had things come relatively easy for her. You know, she had done well in school. She was popular. Like, she didn't have issues. But I think once she joined that program in high school and didn't do well, it kind of... Maybe. I don't know if it messed with her confidence.
Yeah, maybe it brought out a little bit of her insecurities.
Yeah, but it seemed that that was kind of a turning point. And, you know, so you add that with just normal high school teenage rebellion,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then I think things did start to get a little troublesome.
Yeah.
After that, though, when she decided not to just drop out and get her GED and re-enroll in the alternative high school, things did seem to get back on track for Danica, though she was still seeing that boy she had met on the bus. And none of the articles that I've read when I was researching this or the Help Find Danica Childs Facebook page that her sisters run have any information on who this guy is, despite the fact that Danica's mom, Diane Zorro, believes that he is directly responsible for her daughter's disappearance.
And do we know the age gap between the two? Because I know you said that she started dating him when she started high school.
Well, no, when she started in that program. So she would take a bus to the community college to take the college level classes there. And he, from what I read, was a student at the community college.
And how old was Danica at that point?
Well, it doesn't specify at what point in high school this was. I'm guessing It doesn't sound like this was, you know, going on for years or anything like that. So she was 17 in 2007. So I'm guessing it was, you know, around this
around
time.
There. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Once Danica had re-enrolled in the alternative high school, like I said, she was back on track and she was scheduled to graduate on time. So, you know, all of the going
back
and
forth.
Yeah. It didn't affect her enough
Good.
That she was going to be behind at least. Diane figured that Danica had just hit a few bumps in the road, but things would be better moving forward. And for a while, they were. But in 2007, in the months leading up to her disappearance, Danica started staying out all night. And her mother was concerned that she was running with the wrong crowd.
Was there any other evidence of that?
There aren't any specifics mentioned in any of the things that I read on this. You know, it's just very general staying out all night, running with the wrong crowd type statements, you know?
Right, but nothing like drug use or
not that they
like
talk
that.
About. I mean, I think I get the impression that there's probably like recreational.
Yeah, I know. She's you know. 16, 17 years old.
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, there's no indication that prior to her disappearance, she had a drug problem or anything like that.
And is there any indication of any problems in the house other than, you know, the typical teenage
angst? Yeah, no, I think it's just typical teenage stuff. I mean, Diane was a single mother of four daughters, but like I said, they were all super close. Danica and her sisters got along and, you know, the house itself seemed fine. I think it was just, like I said, just normal kind of teenage stuff.
Yeah, the questions that I'm asking.
And I actually don't think that all of her sisters lived with them at the time because her oldest sister is 9 years older. So
she would have been out.
Yeah.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The questions that I'm asking are probing in the sense of trying to find where the fissure might be.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking about sex trafficking and grooming behaviors,
mm-hmm.
typically when somebody is grooming somebody for either sex abuse or sex trafficking, it's trying to find like a need.
Right.
To fill.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what my thinking is behind these questions.
Yeah. And I think those are completely reasonable questions. And speaking as a former 17-year-old girl who, you know, also grew up in like a fairly normal house, you know, 17-year-old girls tend to have a lot of needs that can be filled.
It's a valid point.
You know?
Yeah.
While her mother was worried about her, it also seems like she thought Danica was getting into run-of-the-mill teenage trouble. Danica's mom had raised other daughters, so this is not her first rodeo.
Right, yeah. 16, 17 years old.
Exactly.
We all stayed out all
yeah,
night.
Yeah, she knew what was up.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't because I was a good kid, but I mean, I understand that there are people like you.
Like me?
Yeah, like you. You're bad. Basically, Diane, you know, thought that Danica was maybe doing some things that were ill-advised, but she wasn't overly worried for her safety. You know, and our kids aren't that age yet, but I can imagine that it's tough. You know that your kid is going to do some things that they probably shouldn't, but they're also right on the cusp of adulthood. So what do? You know, do you come down super hard? Do you shrug it off?
Yeah, I mean, that's difficult to maintain that balance. It's like you want to give them a little bit of freedom because
yeah.
they are so close to adulthood. But you want to still, you know, be able to keep an eye on them and keep them kind of roped in and focused.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I think it must be difficult to figure out that balance without risking driving them away.
Right, yeah.
In this particular situation, it didn't help that Danica and her family didn't seem to live in the best part of town. According to an article in the Federal Way Mirror, they lived in an apartment near 272nd Street and Pacific Highway South in Federal Way, Washington, which is apparently a notorious intersection that was known as a hotbed for sex work. Despite Diane's concerns about Danica, she was still the lovable, happy daughter whom she had always known. On December 21st, 2007, the two chatted on the phone about Danica's plans. So, and I think that's really important to mention that, you know, even though there had been some bumps in the road, and I think the relationship was probably a little strained at times, and at the time, Danica was staying with a family friend, they still had a relationship. Like, they were still in contact. Danica hadn't shut her family out or anything like that.
Why was she staying with a family friend?
I think it just had to do with all of this kind of, you know, rebellion, staying out all night type things. I think that they just needed maybe a little bit of a break.
Mm.
Diane knew where Danica was. Like, she knew who she was with. And
yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. And so this day, December 21st, they chatted. They called, you know, they were on the phone talking about plans, just talking about normal life stuff. And Danica was planning on coming home that day so that she could go Christmas shopping with her sisters. It was a perfectly normal conversation, but after they hung up, Diane realized that she had forgotten to tell Danica something, so she called right back. But Danica's phone went straight to voicemail. And that was weird because, after all, they had literally just been on the phone. But Danica had also mentioned that her battery was running low, so Diane, you know, didn't give it too much thought. But Danica didn't make it home to go Christmas shopping with her sisters, and her phone continued to go straight to voicemail. When Danica hadn't shown up by the next day and no one had seen or heard from her, Diane knew something was wrong, so she called the police. And here's where the story will start to sound familiar. Diane knew that something had happened to her daughter, but police didn't take her super seriously, despite the fact that Danica at this time was underaged. Initially, they classified her as a runaway, but that didn't sit right with Diane. Keep in mind that even though Danica had been running with a rough crowd and staying out too much, she had never run away before. And remember, I said earlier that Danica's life seemed to be on an upswing, so it didn't make any sense to Diane that Danica would have a whole conversation with her about Christmas shopping and, you know, other mundane things, and then just run away immediately after.
Right. Yeah, that's a little weird.
Yeah, exactly. In the days that followed, Diane's beliefs would turn out to be more than just motherly instincts. Evidence would emerge that strongly indicated that Danica wasn't just some rebellious teenager who ran away. Her daughter was living a dark life, and things Diane was about to discover shook her to her core. The first thing Diane found out was that Danica didn't spend the night before her disappearance at that friend's house. Instead, she spent the night at the Sunset Motel in nearby Kent, Washington. Yeah, you're raising your eyebrows at me, because if you think a place called the Sunset Motel may be shady, you were correct. It was well known in the area for being a place for drugs and prostitution. There's actually, so I looked it up, and the few photos that I could find look exactly like you would expect them to look. And there's a single Yelp review for it, which is obviously one star. And it's a few paragraphs long, but it ends with, quote, "There was a crowd gathered all night in the parking lot and dispersed only when an occasional police car patrol entered. The door in my room had obviously been kicked in more than once."
Wow.
End quote. Yeah, so that's kind of the place we're talking about. And it's obviously not a place that you'd want your 17-year-old daughter to be hanging out, but Diane initially didn't try to go too dark with her thoughts because she knew that sometimes teenagers would just rent motel rooms to have a place to go party.
Right, and it's probably a cheap hotel.
Well, yeah. So when I looked it up, the current 2020 rates start at $39 a night. So
it's rather affordable for exactly. a 17-year-old.
And I can only imagine they have a pretty lax ID policy, though you do have to pay a $10 key and remote control deposit.
Okay.
Yeah. But when police went to the motel, they didn't find Danica, but they did find her coat, her purse, and her cell phone.
Not good.
No. And obviously none of this stuff is something a 17-year-old girl would willingly leave behind. And don't forget, this is late December. The high in Kent that day was only 41, and the temperatures dipped into the low 30s that night. So it's simply not feasible to think that Danica just happily walked out of that motel room. If Diane's heart sank when she saw her daughter's important items left behind in this motel room, then it dropped through the floor a few days later. Police apparently gave Diane Danica's cell phone. And I guess...
Did they go through it at all? Did they...
I don't think police did. So I think at this point they were classifying her as an endangered runaway. And so maybe because of that, they didn't collect these things as evidence.
Even if you don't collected as evidence per se, like runaway, kidnapping, whatever, there's got to be some evidence on that phone.
Oh, yeah. Like, there was a ton of evidence on the phone.
Go through the phone.
But Diane found the evidence on the phone. So it took her a few days, but she eventually figured out Danica's password to the phone. And when she did, she saw that Danica had several unheard voicemails starting shortly after Diane had last spoken to her daughter. So right off the bat, this makes Diane think that Danica disappeared shortly after they spoke because it didn't appear that she had used the phone since. This is good because it helps establish a timeline a little bit. Danica hadn't been reported missing until a day after anyone had seen or heard from her, so police were initially working with a pretty big window. But the time Danica stopped using her phone wasn't the only thing Diane was able to determine. She listened to those voicemails, and it sounds like there were several from different men. They were sexually explicit, and Diane realized that her beloved underage daughter was a sex worker.
Oh no.
Yeah. As the days and weeks went on, Diane learned more information about her daughter's double life. Remember that boyfriend that she met on the bus? Yeah, he's rumored to be a pimp. And Diane soon believed that he was the one who had groomed her daughter and had gotten her into sex work. And, you know, to be clear, I am very pro-sex work and pro-sex workers and feel that they need to be protected. But Danica was underage. So as much as she may have felt that she was making her own decisions, she was a 17-year-old high schooler, and none of this is okay.
Yeah, and I'm sure that the idea was even brought on, you know, by the boyfriend.
Exactly. And if he was the one who got her into this, then he was trafficking Danica.
Right.
So not only is Diane dealing with this realization, which is heartbreaking for her, but it's compounded by the fact that she now believes more than ever that her daughter didn't run away. She was kidnapped and maybe even sold. Based on this new evidence, police do start to come around to her viewpoint, but it takes a while. Diane told Oxygen.com, quote, "It was frustrating back then because I think a lot more could have been done on the police end of things. But it's like she's a runaway and I had to twist arms and do a lot of my own research and talk to the Seattle Police Department to even get it identified and classified as a human trafficking case."
Yeah, I wonder if the difference in classification of a runaway versus a possible kidnapping, I wonder if that distinction leads to not having a lead detective on it.
Yeah.
Because like, it seems like the police were a little unorganized in the case. And I wonder if that could have been because there was nobody taking charge of the case.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know.
I don't know either, but probably. And, you know, at some point down the line, the FBI does get involved because the FBI automatically gets involved in trafficking cases when the victim is underage. But that did not happen for a while.
For a while, right. Because she was classified as a runaway.
Right. And the thing about it, though, is if you look up Danica and you'll go to her Charlie Project page and, you know, different sources like that, she's still listed as an endangered runaway. Days, weeks, months, and finally years go by with basically no evidence and no clue as to what happened to Danica. Absent a body, though, her family held out hope that she was alive and would return to them soon. But soon it was the fifth anniversary of her disappearance, and the only trace of her was old news articles and the Help Find Danica Child's Facebook page that her sister started. It wouldn't be until 2015 that the family received the first possible lead since Danica's belongings were found in that Kent motel room. One of Danica's friends saw a photo on Instagram of a woman in Las Vegas who bore an uncanny resemblance to Danica. It looked so much like her, in fact, that one of Danica's sisters posted it on her Facebook page. I mean, her own sister thought it was her, but she quickly took it down. So I don't know if they found, you know, who it really was or what was going on, but obviously, you know, they didn't think it was Danica ultimately.
Yeah. I mean, have the police, did they question the boy, quote unquote?
That's what I keep on trying to figure out. And I've actually reached out to the sisters on the Facebook page to ask that question because it's just so unclear
as to what level of investigation was done.
Yeah. And So I, because his name was never mentioned, I didn't even know if like anybody knew his identity. And so they did reply to me and say that, yes, they knew his identity. But the follow-up question that I had that I haven't gotten a response to is whether he has ever been interviewed, or if you read some of her missing reports, it says that she may be in the company of an adult male. And so I'm wondering if that's
the adult male.
Right. And he hasn't been interviewed because they don't know where he is either. So that is the part that I'm not completely clear on. But yeah, there have been no leads, like no persons of interest. I mean, nothing. But the weird thing is too, that after that picture was posted, one of Danica's sisters, and I'm unclear as to whether it was the same sister, received a Facebook message from someone claiming to be Danica. She said she was in hiding, but, you know, the family didn't immediately dismiss this as a hoax because whomever wrote this knew some of the sisters' childhood nicknames for each other.
Mm.
They quickly alerted police, and apparently the FBI even got involved, but the profile was removed right after the message was sent. And according to the Help Find Danica Child's page, they claimed that they couldn't trace it.
What else did the message say? It just said she was in hiding?
Yeah. And like I said, used the nicknames. So it seems like it was, you know, kind of like, hey, I'm okay, but I can't come back type thing.
Mm.
I do feel like Facebook could be of service in this particular situation because, you know, even though it was taken down immediately, I would feel that Facebook would still have some information.
Some sort of records.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Facebook isn't exactly
known for being helpful.
No.
Yeah. And this was back in 2015, and after that, it's basically it for leads in this case. Danica's face has been plastered everywhere in Washington and beyond over the years. Missing photos in Walmart, on flyers attached to pizza boxes, and even blown up on the side of tractor trailers. There have been the potential grim endings, like the time police contacted Diane because they found a body of a woman who matched Danica's description. But it wasn't her, and to this day, no one has ever come forward saying they know anything about what happened to Danica that December afternoon nearly 13 years ago. Danica's family still holds out hope that she's out there, and they've been volunteering with anti-trafficking groups in hopes of bringing awareness to this pervasive problem that took their loved one from them. As it turns out, Washington State, due to its proximity to Canada and multiple ports, is a hotbed for human trafficking, both sex trafficking and labor trafficking.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. This is something that Diane has talked about because, you know, she was completely unaware of this prior to her daughter's disappearance.
Yeah, well, it's not something that's like common knowledge or commonly talked about.
Yeah, exactly. But it sounds like she's really done a lot of education and, like I said, has been working with groups, you know, to warn parents about this because it is so pervasive, not just in that area, but everywhere. While they have yet to bring Danica back, their efforts and those of their fellow volunteers have certainly not been in vain. Jennifer Tucker was an average mom of four in her 30s when her marriage and life fell apart in 2010. Her husband sent her two youngest children to visit family in Brazil and never brought them back. Her two oldest children were sent to live with relatives in Texas. Broke and emotionally shattered, Tucker turned to sex work to make ends meet. She was eventually approached by a man who she fell in love with, and he had her move to California, and he became her pimp. After several years, several states, and several pimps and thousands of clients, Jennifer ended up back in Washington. She had just finished up with a client when she saw a group of people marching near her motel in green shirts and signs that said things like "not for sale." She asked a woman what it was about and found that the group was bringing awareness to sex trafficking victims and specifically marching there to reach sex workers to let them know that they are loved and cared about. And that was the moment that Jennifer decided she needed to get out of the life for good. It didn't happen immediately for her, but in 2017, she was working as a live-in nanny and a barista and joined the group for the Break the Chains 5K to End Human Trafficking. Jennifer didn't know a soul there, but quickly met a group of people with Team Danica signs. It was Danica's family attending one of the many events together that they do as much as they possibly can to make sure that Danica is never forgotten and knows that she's still loved. You can read more about Jennifer's story in an excellent article written by Taylor Murfin-Dureski for King5.com. It's linked on our blog, and I embedded a few video interviews with Jennifer. It gives an excellent insight on how a quote-unquote normal person can so easily fall victim to sex trafficking. She gives an unflinchingly honest portrayal into all of the ups and downs of her life, and I cannot recommend it enough to really give you an insight into this process.
So you said there was that sighting in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was her or not,
yeah,
there's a potential lead there. Where was Bear's case? Was that Las Vegas?
No, that was California.
That was California.
San Diego.
Okay. I just wonder if we have any listeners that are out in the Las Vegas area to, you know, go on our website and look at Danica's pictures.
Yeah.
And just see.
Keep an eye out.
Keep an eye. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole point of this podcast, is to raise awareness of missing persons. And if you're in that area, or if you're in Washington, you know, look at her picture and keep an eye out for her.
Mm-hmm. Because she very much could be alive.
Yeah.
We really don't know. And in Jennifer's case, like I said, it was several years in several states. So she's from Washington. She's from the same area that Danica is. But like I said, her first pimp had her move out to California. And then she moved around from there. She ended up in Texas at one point.
Yeah. So who knows where Danica could be.
Exactly. And, you know, Jennifer's case, because she was an adult in her 30s when this started, she was 100% being trafficked, but at the time felt like, for the most part, she was still making her own decisions, you know?
But yeah, that comes down to manipulation. I mean, the people that do this are just master manipulators, and they know the pattern. They know exactly how to engage people and normalize this type of behavior.
Yeah. And going back to, you know, what your question about filling a need.
Right.
That's exactly what Jennifer talks about, because she had a marriage fall apart. Mm-hmm. All four of her children went away. And so she had a few needs. Her immediate need was, she was trying to raise money to get her youngest kids back from Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like her first, okay, I'm going to do this because this is how I'm going to make money thing, right?
Yeah.
But then her secondary, more long-term need was born out of loneliness. She wanted somebody to love her.
Right.
And she talks about that. And that's why she, you know, thinks that she fell in love with this guy so quickly, who did manipulate her and, you know, used all the classic things with like withholding emotion. And, you know, eventually he did start abusing her as well. But she just desperately needed that. And that's how she ended up with the second pimp in Texas. It was the same situation. They made promises. They basically said that they would help her. They would change her life. They'd give her what she was looking for. And from her perspective, she was making these decisions.
Right.
But it was all born out of trauma and manipulation.
Exactly.
And it took her a long time to get out of it. You know, well longer than she just, you know, it took her a lot longer to get out of it after she even decided that she didn't want to do it anymore. Because, of course, that took time too, right? It's not like she was in it for 20 minutes and then decided she wanted to get out. She wanted to be in the life for a period of time.
Yeah. And it once you decide to change your life, it does take time. I mean,
right.
It's
and there was so much shame involved for her. So as the years went on, she had a harder time dealing with the actual clients and the things that she actually had to do. So she started turning to drugs. And so then she has a drug problem that she's trying to support.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's everything connected with that. Then there's the shame of what she's been doing for the past several years. And she had a loving family, just like Danica does.
Right.
She had parents. She had somebody who would take her back, but she didn't feel that she did, right? Because, you know, her family was very religious. And
a lot of those ideas are injected by the manipulator, too.
Well, exactly, yeah.
To keep them doing whatever it is that they want them to do.
Right.
And this goes beyond just sex trafficking, but specific for sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the drugs were introduced by, you know, the pimps. Basically anything to keep them dependent on that person.
Right.
And that what that person wants.
Yeah. And she just got to the point where she just felt that she had done so many wrong things. Once she started with the drugs, then the arrests started, as they do, you know? And so she's in and out of jail. She's on drugs. She is still working as a sex worker. And as you start piling these things on, the idea of going home was feeling further and further away.
Right.
And that is what Danica's family is concerned about. And that's why they run this Facebook page. And that's why they do these events, because, you know, they're just so desperately hoping to reach her and make her understand that even if she has made mistakes, even if she has done things that she's ashamed of, that
she still has a loving family.
Yeah,
that she
they
can
still
come
love
home
her.
To.
She still matters.
Right.
She still has a place to come back to. And that's really what I would like to get through to people with this whole episode, is that it's really important when you think about sex trafficking to realize how it happens and how insidious it can be. I mean, Danica was not a runaway. She was not somebody who had been thrown away. She was a high school girl who wanted to be loved, and this guy preyed on that. So it's really important to talk to your kids about things like this and know who they're hanging out with and know that they can come to you and that they are loved. Because the sex trafficker isn't a scary guy in a trench coat hanging out in a dark alley ready to snatch your kid off the street. The sex trafficker is a nice community college student who your daughter meets on the bus.
Right. That's how they start the manipulation, is that they gain the person's trust and form that type of relationship, mm-hmm. where, you know, they feel like they can go to that person for anything.
Exactly. Today, Danica's sisters maintain the Help Find Danica Child's Facebook page. It's a mix of pleas for information, news on their volunteer and awareness events, and memories of their sister who was stolen from them. They still celebrate her birthday every year, often gathering with family and friends and releasing balloons. They also write messages to Danica with the hope that she's out there somewhere reading them. One post from her sister said, quote, "Woke up this morning thinking about what all I'm thankful for, mixed with the sadness, heaviness, and emptiness of missing you. What is the hardest is the unknown. If I knew you were in heaven, I could talk to you and feel you near me at times. If I knew you were alive and well, my heart could be at ease. But it will never be at ease until I know you are okay and not hurting or suffering. I'm thankful for all our past memories and hopeful for more one day. I love you, Danica Diane."
Now is the time for people to go on our blog. You know, look at those pictures of every missing person that we've covered,
mm-hmm.
and familiarize yourself with their face, with their age progress photos, you know, and just keep an eye out. It doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter if you're in the region where the missing person, you know, went missing from.
Yeah.
But you might recognize somebody and you might be the missing link in the case.
Diane Childs has been missing since December 21st, 2007. She would be 30 years old today. If you have any information on her current whereabouts or what may have happened to her at the Sunset Motel, please call 1-800-THE-LOST or the Federal Way Police Department at 253-835-6700. You can see all of the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos, on our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at @ATTWGPod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us.
We'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.